by the drought, the United States is also providing support for refugees in Kenya who have fled drought and conflict in their own countries. It is not a famine, but it is rising up to the levels of getting close to famine, said Matt Nims, acting director of Food for Peace at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID. That is why we want to act now, so that we're not into that stage.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Spanish police continue a manhunt for the driver who plowed his van into pedestrians along Barcelona's Las Ramblas Boulevard Thursday, killing 13, injuring dozens. Among those, a 7-year-old British-Australian boy. Another person was killed hours later in Cambrils, a seaside town south of Barcelona. Sunday, King Felipe and Prince Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy led a 90-minute ceremony commemorating the victims. Among those in Barcelona expressing shock, Indian shopkeeper Gaurav Liwani.
I came here to tell the total community in the Barcelona that we are also in a deep shock and nothing should be happened ever in the world. So, really, it's a very bad thing. Terrorism, that should never should be happened anywhere in the world.
The other 12 conspirators, including an imam, have either been arrested or believed dead following attacks claimed by Islamic State. Authorities are searching for Moroccan-born Yunus Abu Yaqub in the Catalonia region where he lived. Senate Foreign Relations Ranking Member Ben Cardin laments the attack couldn't have been prevented.
Clearly something was missed here, and we have to find out how that was missed. The United States, working with our allies, need to make sure that we follow up on the information we have. It's unacceptable to see the signs that we saw in Spain and still the tragedies that took place.
The suspects were believed to have been making bombs for a much larger attack. Nigerians Sunday celebrated the return Saturday veiling President Muhammadu Buhari, following a long stay in the United Kingdom for treatment of an undisclosed illness. Mr. Buhari left the country May 7 for his second prolonged stay in Britain in a year. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump is to address the nation Monday evening about the way forward in Afghanistan. After a month-long review, Mr. Trump has decided on a U.S. strategy for trying to end America's longest war. Wilson Center South Asia analyst Michael Kugelman said it will also be a policy likely to involve Pakistan.
My own gut feeling is that even after a very long, really 8 months strategy review period, I imagine that the president will come out with a policy that will be very similar to what has been used by the Obama administration, which entails maintaining a modest U.S. military presence that could entail sending several thousand more troops to enhance the current U.S. training mission.
Kugelman said while progress in training Afghan security forces has been made, the security situation in the country is alarming. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad Sunday, speaking to diplomats, dismissed any thought of security cooperation with Western countries that have backed rebels in the 6-year conflict. Mr. Assad said Syria's friends are in the east, Iran, Russia, and Lebanon's Hezbollah. His comments followed recent government victories backed by Russia and Iran, including negotiated withdrawals by besieged rebel groups. The forces of South Korea, the U.S., and several allies are beginning 10 days of annual military exercises in South Korea Monday, an event that North Korea denounced as a prelude to invasion. Harry Kazianis of the Washington-based Center for the National Interest said the computer-simulated exercises are vital.
What it actually ultimately does is test something called command and control. When you have armies, navies, air forces all working together, all the various computer systems and whatnot all have to talk in order to execute commands. And that's basically what this does.
It comes at a time of heightened tensions over North Korea's missile and nuclear programs. Tens of thousands like Tong Hyu Hyun marched in Hong Kong Sunday, protest the sentencing of three democracy activists who led the 2014 Umbrella Movement.
We can see that the government is trying to put a very heavy sentencing to fear us in our future struggle on democracy.
Joshua Wong, Nathan Law, and Alex Chow were sentenced to 6 to 8 months Thursday for their role in the Umbrella Movement rallies, months-long demonstrations that called for democratic reform. Many Americans have converged on a narrow path of land covering 14 states, expected to experience a total solar eclipse later Monday, the first scientific phenomenon of its kind there in nearly a century. There was a run on special eclipse glasses designed to protect eyes. The Earth, Moon, and Sun line up every few years. The total eclipse running west to east at midday will begin in Oregon and move across a narrow 100-kilometer path toward South Carolina. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. SADC leaders conclude their 37th summit in South Africa as non-state actors vow to monitor declaration.
It's clear that there is an overarching message coming from each of these regional leaders that this is a region which is undoubtedly politically stable and peaceful. However, we are still to see the proceeds of peace, political stability, translate into human development.
Debra Smuchedna is an Amnesty International's regional director for Southern Africa. There is a new wave of grenade attacks in Burundi. Gambia's foreign minister and longtime opposition leader dispels allegations he wants to be president. And George Weah's political coalition officially launches its campaign for Liberia's 2017 presidential election.
Liberians at every age level came out in the thousands. I mean, we'll call it a triple tsunami. I saw tears coming down from the eyes of people. And I think this time I can see George Weah winning with not less than 60% of the vote on the first ballot.
Nathaniel McGee is chairman of the Coalition for Democratic Change of Liberia. We will talk with an official of the Sierra Leone Red Cross 1 week after a deadly mudslide. And for the first time in 99 years, the entire United States will experience a solar eclipse. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports in our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, on Sunday concluded their 37th summit in South Africa that focused on the theme partnering with the private sector in developing industry and regional value chains. The leaders also dealt with a number of issues in a number of member countries. Debra Smuchedna is Amnesty International's regional director for Southern Africa. He says non-state actors like Amnesty International will monitor a declaration that seems to suggest that the region is enjoying political stability.
As you know, it is very difficult to establish achievements of a summit as it concludes, but we will have to monitor the declarations made today, especially at the closing, by the chairperson's statement at the closing of the summit. It's clear that there is an overarching message coming from each of these regional leaders that this is a region which is undoubtedly politically stable and peaceful. However, from the perspective of non-state actors, we are still to see the proceeds of peace, political stability, and security translate into human development, into expanded freedoms, into rights for ordinary people.
Talking about human development, my understanding was that the theme of the just concluded summit was to be infrastructure development. What was the outcome on this particular theme?
Obviously, regional integration was a sub-aspect of the theme, but actually the theme that they adopted as a summit was partnering with the private sector in developing industry and regional value chain. The problem we have in Southern Africa is that the region continues to be saddled by the triple burden of poverty, of unemployment and inequality. And unless the industrialization strategy and roadmap focuses its attention on addressing this triple burden, then the next 12 months will simply mean that SADC will remain the same as it is. The second major issue is that you still have conflicts and political instability problems, despite them declaring the region as a peaceful one in countries like Lesotho, in countries like Angola, disturbances in countries like Zambia in terms of what we are seeing of shrinking space for freedoms.
Muchena, coming into this summit, this story about Mrs. Mugabe, I don't know whether I should call it a story that had the potential to distract from the purpose of the summit, or maybe it was just a side story. But is it true now that the South African government has decided to grant Mrs. Mugabe diplomatic immunity? And if that's the case, how do you think South Africans are taking this decision?
Well, it is in fact true that the South African government has indeed granted immunity to Mrs. Grace Mugabe, and that in fact Ms. Grace Mugabe and her husband are back in Zimbabwe. And they've, of course, invoked their own laws in terms of the protocols of diplomatic immunity, which in fact now raises two problems for South Africans and Zimbabweans. One, the spectra of impunity when it is affecting political leaders. That coming to attack a person in South Africa and just leaving and invoking protection in terms of diplomatic immunity leaves a sour taste for those who are seeking justice.
Debra Smuchena is the Amnesty International's Regional Director for Southern Africa. He was speaking with me from South Africa. At least three people were killed last Friday in grenade attacks in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. There were also more grenade attacks reported in the countryside over the weekend, causing fear of a resurgence of violence. Moses Havyarimana has the story.
Since President Pierre Nkurunziza officially took the office for the third time in August 2015, the country had gained relative stability for more than a year now. And after violent protests against the incumbent president erupted that led to more than 500 people killed. Opposition say that president's move to run for a third term in the office was unconstitutional. The country is now experiencing a wave of grenade attacks in bars, public places and government officials being targeted by unknown armed groups. Burundi authority claims that the attacks are merely made by criminals and not politically motivated. At least three people were killed and 29 were injured in another twin grenade attack in Bujumbura neighborhood, Buyenzi. Within less than 2 weeks, a grenade killed two people in the same neighborhood in a local bar. Leandre is a 27-year-old Burundian who survived the attack but was injured on the arm.
I heard an explosion. Then I felt my arm was hit. And then we dived under the table. After like 30 seconds, we had another explosion just 10 meters away from where we were in another bar. So the ambulance came after 10 minutes and we were taken to the hospital.
Last month, eight people were killed in a grenade attack in Kayanza province located in the northern part of Burundi. The attacks are considered among the series of targeted attacks on Burundi government officials. High government officials have been assassinated in the kind of attacks since 2015. Pierre Nkurikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
And they begin with the police investigation. And some parts of grenades found by the police show that these criminals were here. They didn't come from outside. And three people have been arrested for the police investigation.
As Burundi president attended a three-day prayer in Gitega, Burundi's second town, he condemned the grenade attack, saying that it was an act of terrorism. A grenade was thrown in a bar in Gitega, which injured five people. This is the same province where President Pierre Nkurunziza had been attending his prayers. Burundi police spokesman downplayed the increased grenade attacks of being politically motivated.
You know, in many cases of grenade attacks in all the country, the perpetrators have been arrested, and the reason behind were interest. But the truth will be known after the end of the investigations.
As Burundi is now experiencing increased insecurity in public places for the last 2 months, two unidentified bodies were found in Mwaro and Gitega provinces, Burundi's countryside. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and today is Monday, August 21st. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, the Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC, led by Senator George Weah as its presidential candidate, officially launched its campaign for the October 10 presidential election. CDC Chairman Nathaniel McGee says Liberians of all ages came out in the thousands to say that they want Weah to be their next president. Weah's CDC party came second in the last two presidential elections. But McGee says this time around, the party has learned its lesson and that Weah is going to win on the first ballot.
Mr. Bote, I'd like to tell you that I'm out of words because what happened in Monrovia in Liberia was unbelievable. Liberians at every age level, young, old, middle age, came out in the thousands. We'll call it a triple tsunami. It was a triple tsunami. I could see people crying. I saw a whole lady crying and said, this was the day she has long been waiting for. She wanted to see George Weah become the next president. I saw tears coming down from the eyes of people. Look, the crowd was so big. They came out to show total support for Senator George Weah. It was unbelievable, Jimmy. And I think this time I can see George Weah winning with not less than 60% of the vote on the first ballot.
I think I recall very well, this was the same thing in 2005 and 2011. What lessons do you think now that the CDC has learned that you think might make your party win this election?
It's a simple lesson, Jim. Simple lesson. The lesson we call protect your votes. At every polling station, we have 5,390 polling places. We intend to deploy at least 15,000 plus polling agents across the country. We are making sure that at least 4 hours after the final counting of the result, the CDC will be able to know its result. That has been one of our challenges, and therefore we are making sure that that area is totally covered.
The thousands of people you refer to, that's just Monrovia. There are thousands more, if not a million or so people outside of Monrovia.
We are taking the campaign to every village outside Monrovia. As a matter of fact, by the weekend we'll be in other countries. You're going to see, Jimmy, our campaign is going to go from door to door, from village to village, from house to house. We are not sitting down. We want to make sure that we win this election in the first round, at least with a margin of not less than 60%. The CDC is prepared, adequately prepared to campaign at every level to make sure that the world of brown people is what will be reflected in the vote.
You mentioned that during the launch you saw old people, young people crying, but I would say probably those were tears of desperation, economic desperation, in case the CDC wins this time. What is it that you are telling the people for which they should vote for you?
Jimmy, you know, Liberians, the bigger thing, people want money in their pocket. They want security. We've provided a platform that, look, once you give the CDC an opportunity, we're going to create an opportunity for jobs to be created. We're going to do a massive agriculture program. Agriculture is the bedrock of our economy. We're going to put most of our young people who are not employed will go down, will go and make farms. You will make money from what you grow. You will eat what you grow. Food self-sufficiency. We're going to open roads. One of the major challenges of the Liberian market is that there's no road. We're going to connect the road. The hospital is going to be strong. We're going to create better health facilities. We're going to strengthen our educational system.
Mr. McGee, can you tell us why did Ambassador Weah skip last week's presidential debate?
Ambassador had an appointment outside Liberia. He had an appointment to meet with the chairman of ECOWAS, who is the president of Togo. And you got to understand the flight issue in West Africa is very complicated. There's no direct flight between Liberia and Togo. You have a flight to Ghana or you fly to Abidjan before coming to Liberia. And from there, you had to go to Morocco. The Moroccan flight comes in around 5 o'clock in the morning. And once he arrived already after Thursday, he came Friday morning around about 5 a.m. So it was not possible for him to be at the debate.
Looking at pictures from the launch of your official campaign or from the campaign, I saw a helicopter bearing the picture of Senator Weah and his running mate, Jua Howard Taylor. Did the campaign purchase this helicopter or?
We don't have money to budget the helicopter, but at least we'll rent it. If it's all in Nairobi, people are renting helicopters to make sure that they can have easy access to some of the areas. There's very difficult terrain for people to go, so it was rented.
Mr. McGee, thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much, Jimmy.
Nathaniel McGee is chair of the Coalition for Democratic Change of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia, a week after a deadly landslide claimed hundreds of lives in Sierra Leone. The death toll continues to mount, but there was a glimmer of hope as one survivor was recovered Sunday. The man was discovered alive, trapped in a house. Unfortunately, his story is rare. The current death toll is nearly 500, according to the Associated Press, and there are still around 600 missing. Sierra Leone Red Cross Society spokesperson Abu Baker Tarawale talked to Ricky Stryak about the tragedy and ongoing rescue efforts.
Well, the operations continue to different locations in the region's area. The community volunteers and Red Cross volunteers continue to support the work of the Ministry of Health and Sanitation and other stakeholders to search and recover bodies and possible survivors.
Are you guys still finding any survivors, or is it just now body retrieval, and how many people are still missing?
Well, surprisingly, one survivor was recovered today.
Wow, where were they found? It's been almost a week.
That amazed everybody. The person was discovered in one of the covered rubble at Regent, and the person has been brought to the Connaught Hospital for treatment.
Did they have food and water where they were, and they were just trapped inside of a house, or how did they survive for a week?
They are trapped in one of the houses covered by the mud from the collapsed landslide.
And was it a man or a woman? How old was he or she?
It was a man, a young adult. He's unwell and tired, so he's been taken care of at the Connaught Hospital now.
I'm sure that was at least some glimmer of hope in what's been a very, very hard week for you guys.
Indeed, indeed.
How many people are still missing?
Well, it is difficult to tell to how many people are still missing because we have just recovered one live for past 3 or 4 days now. This is the first case of a live case. Ever since, we have been struggling to see where we can recover any of the 600 missing. So up to now, it is still around that figure.
I was in Sierra Leone during Ebola a few times, and what I'm reading now brings back bad memories of it because it's people losing their entire families, it feels like. Is that what you guys are seeing?
Yes, this brings back many sense of the Ebola effect on the population of Sierra Leone. But this is even described by many here as even worse than Ebola because this has left hundreds of people missing and has given dismembered body parts of people, also having hundreds of people dying in the same day, which was never the case. So yes, it brings back the ugly memory of Ebola when we lost thousands of people in Sierra Leone within a very short period. Arguably, it is worse than Ebola because it happened within just a few hours.
That was Abu Baker Tarawale, Sierra Leone Red Cross Society spokesperson. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown. Gambia's Foreign Minister Usenu Dabo over the weekend dispelled allegations that he wants to be president by any means necessary. Mr. Dabo says his primary goal has been to see to it that President Yahya Jammeh's government was removed. Pandere Mbaye reports.
President Adama Barrow's mandate to serve as president has become a talking point in the Gambia. Opinions are divided over Barrow's mandate. While the constitution says the president should serve for a 5-year mandate, a memorandum of understanding which was reached by the coalition government back in 2016 said Barrow's transitional government should last for 3 years. On Sunday, Gambia's Foreign Minister Usenu Dabo, in an interview with a U.S.-based online radio, Fatu Radio, had this to say.
Let us accept the term of the president is 5 years. And it is that constitutional position that I say, what is that that goes? If I was power hungry, I would say, oh, yes, it's 3 years. But even that memorandum that you refer to, we talk about this, has not been signed by anybody.
Mr. Dabo did not stop at demanding to see the much-talked-about MOU. He also dispels allegations that he wants to be Gambia's president by any means necessary.
I want everybody in UDC and even everybody in the Gambia to know that I am not in a case to be the president of this country. I have never been. I have always wanted to get this country out of the struggles of a journey and together with other people that succeeded in so doing. So this perception, this idea that Mr. Dabo wants to be president of this country by all means is really rubbish.
President Adama Barrow was elected into office in December of 2016 after defeating Gambia's longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Jammeh is living in exile in Equatorial Guinea. The Member of Parliament for Sierra Kunda, Halifa Salla, has always maintained that President Barrow should stick to the 3 year transition period agreed upon by the coalition government. But Usain Dabo says the MOU is not legally binding. Mr. Dabo also reacted to recent allegations made by the leader of Gambia's Democratic Congress, Mama Kande, who accused the Barrow government of pocketing loans acquired from financial lenders. Mr. Kande was briefly questioned by the police and later released. Kande said he refused to cooperate with the police during his invitation, saying that the matter doesn't concern the police, but the government of the Gambia. He called on the police to remain professional in the due execution of their duties. For Daybreak Africa, this is Pandey Mbaye reporting.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the results from the second and final leg of matches in the 2018 African Nations Championship played across various venues on the continent this past weekend. Defending champions DR Congo failed to qualify for the Total African Cup of Nations. The Leopards were unable to make it 5 out of 5 wins after a 1-1 draw at home against Congo in Kinshasa. We saw them miss out on qualification. It is the first time that the Leopards winners in 2009 and 2016 have failed to reach the finals of the competition, and they are by far the most successful after two triumphs, with neighbors Congo serving their nemesis. Congo's elimination of the holders count as the biggest shock of the final round. Elsewhere, second-half strikes from Amer Ngoji and Raphael Boli was all Cameroon needed in Limbe to complete a double over Sao Tome and Principe and advance 4-0 on aggregate. In Luanda, Alex Masuguna's 61-minute strike gave Angola a lone goal victory over Madagascar, with the former progressing to the finals 1-0 on aggregate. It is the first time after 2011 and 2016 that the Palancas Negras have reached the final tournament. Cote d'Ivoire and Nigeria confirmed their places for next year's finals after beating Niger and Benin 1-0 and 2-0 respectively. The Ivorians, host of the maiden edition and bronze winners last year in Rwanda, advanced on the away goal rule after a 2-2 tie on aggregate, while Nigeria edged neighbours Benin 2-1 on aggregate. Staying with results from Chad, Sudan defeated Ethiopia 1-0 in the 2018 African Nations Championship qualifiers on Saturday. As a result, the Falcons of Jidene qualified for the 2018 Chad finals after winning the tightly contested tie 2-1 on aggregate. Zambia defeated South Africa 2-0 at the Levi Mwanawasa Stadium in Ndola on Saturday to qualify for the Chan tournament. And after a draw with Algeria 1-1 on Friday at the Taib Mehri Stadium in Tunisia, Libya qualified for the 2018 African Nations Championship in Kenya. And now to basketball. Nigeria became the first country to qualify for the FIBA Women's AfroBasket 2017 quarterfinals following their win over Egypt on Sunday in Bamako, Mali. This brings Nigeria's win ratio to 3-0 at the biennial continental competition that has attracted 12 teams, the best in Africa. Nigeria firmly on top of Group B with 6 points, but still have to play against Guinea and reigning champions Senegal. And Jeferina Diawara sunk a game high of 18 points to guide Cote d'Ivoire to a 57-54 win over Cameroon on Saturday at the Palace des Sports Salamato Mwenga in Bamako, Mali. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, this piece of news about today's solar eclipse. Today, Monday, August 21st, for the first time in 99 years, the entire United States will experience a solar eclipse, and excitement is building across the nation. Experts advise that people wear specific protective eyewear to view the eclipse, but finding the special lenses is becoming a difficult task. And that's it for this Monday, August 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying have a lovely, lovely week in Africa.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source.